Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hello.
Hello, hello. So, here we are on a nice rainy Friday.
We just had some thunder. I don't like it.
When I left out, you don't like it?
I don't like thunder.
Well, did we have thunder? I didn't even know we had thunder. I was busy trying to drive home, and we had lots of, you know, police and ambulances because somehow people, when it rains, and I know that people in the snow say the same thing, nobody knows how to do it. They suddenly lose their compass on what to do. So,
right.
You know. But anyway, so now we are actually sitting here in two different places for the day.
Yes. Yes, my uterus decided it was going to try and rebel, and I for any folks who know me personally, and I may have mentioned this on the radio show before, I'm not sure. I talk about menstruation a lot. I do not like how in our mainstream world bleeding is treated as this taboo, gross thing that you're supposed to hide. So I'm very open and loud. And maybe a little obnoxious about my menstrual cycle, but needless to say, I'm struggling right now. I'm in a little bit of pain, and so I decided to call in to the show and do it from home instead of doing it with Elvira face to face, which is much our preferred method. But you know, the uterus won tonight.
Hey, and I totally understand since I'm not there anymore with the bleeding, but I do remember the awesome feeling of being like, why did you decide to take me down? I really appreciate it. Yeah. So I have no problem with the process of being in your nice place and you know, dealing with it that way.
I'll admit, I'm wearing a robe and slippers right now.
Well, I was halfway there. I got my slippers on and my nice socks, but I never quite got into changing into my jammies, but it would have been that we would have both been sitting here doing it in jammies. I'm, you know, all for it, but, you know, again, it's the weather. It kind of begs for us to kind of have, you know, like, we should have hot chocolate or something together.
But totally.
That being said, so I will ask my favorite question, you know, outside of this particular day, how was your week?
My week has been very busy, as per usual. Yesterday, my daughter turned 16, so we had
happy birthday.
Yeah, so we had many birthday adventure things and a family gathering last night. And right now, actually, she's off with her friends doing her friend gathering. And tomorrow, she's having more parties with her dad and his family. And so the party continues. So that's been fun and weird. It's boggles my mind that I have a 16-year-old child. I don't really understand how that happened. That's, you know, besides just kind of the regular life busy stuff, that's been my little special thing this week. How are you doing, Elvira?
Oh, well, I get to rant a bit, I guess. I'm feeling a little ranty. Not randy, ranty. You know, I love my clients. I love doing the work I do. And over the years, we have people that, you know, have come in our lives, stay long, stay short, drive us crazy, and then go on about their business. And when I say drive us crazy, it's because their needs, their energies are so stuck or spun in a specific way, and you're trying to help them reformat, and they're just not going there. Unfortunately, I have been dealing with a particular type of individual, and this is why I'm on my rant. I want magic in the world to be the way we all envision it. I want it to be able to burn candles and do rituals and, you know, do all the things, you know, clang the bells and everything, and have what you want in that ritual and that situation happen.
Immediately.
And, yeah, unfortunately, there is another part of the equation. And it's just when somebody says to you that your work didn't do what she or he wanted it,
mm-hmm.
and come the way they wanted it, and then you turn around and say, I've said this over and over in all the readings and all the times, and we even do invoices where we have, you know, particular statements we make about doing magic and doing
mm-hmm.
rituals and doing whatever. And very upset and wanting, you know, a certain amount of recompense, like, if this didn't work, I want this, and I want you to do it for free because I paid you for this and it didn't work and you owe me this. And I'm like, no, I did the work, and, you know, we got all the little things that show it, the pictures and the emails. And then after all that is done, I go, okay, look, I will do a candle for you. I will do mm-hmm. a visual candle, and I will put it, pack it with exactly the kind of energy that will, you know, come out as best it can. But again, invoice goes out with the information. Unfortunately, the individual, and they agreed until they got the invoice and they realized it wasn't identical to what they had paid the ritual work. It was a candle.
Mm-hmm.
And they got very upset at me. And they kept trying to present me as not keeping to my ethics and my word and a bunch of things, really just bullying me.
Mm.
And I still did the candle, and I put all the things aside, and I did this. And then, of course, it turned out to be a fairly good thing. Unfortunately, she did not get the job she wanted, of course, and that was because this wasn't a ritual or whatever. Anyway, my one thought on this is that why continue to push for something that you already said, in essence, the things I did before didn't work. Why do that? So my rant is basically that I am disturbed that people want something to happen the way they want it, in the manner they want it, and have magic do this because, you know, it's going to be, you put a coin in, you push the button for an apple, and
right.
you get an apple out.
Right.
And that's not what magic does.
No.
That's
no.
my rant.
Yeah, I'm
and,
sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been the gist of, you know, my coming to grips with, you know, you put yourself out, you do the things, you do it, and you know you're going to find that something doesn't go right. And here's the other part. How many times have we done our work for ourselves or had people do it for us or whatever, you know, and
right.
it doesn't work in getting us exactly what we were looking for.
Right.
But then something happens, and we either get something completely out of left field that we never thought of, or the thing that we wanted so much down the road, we actually find would have been the worst thing in the world for us to have.
Right, right.
You know, and that, unfortunately, is what wisdom is about, and I guess, because, you know, you couldn't have told me some of the things that now I look at and tell people back when I was in my 20s and 30s and even in my 40s somewhere. So,
you know, it,
but
when it comes to doing magic, you have to leave room for spirit, you know? Like, you don't always know what's best, and that's, we all have guides and allies that help us out, and sometimes they can see the road better than we can. You have to leave a little bit of room for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's teaching me more. This is, I guess, why even the rant is kind of like a half, I don't want to say half-assed, but it's just, it's there and I'm frustrated with the process. But in reality, it's kind of teaching me to not engage in the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, and that is out in the world, too. I mean, all of what we're seeing and hearing on all levels of our lives. You know, how, yes, we can be active and proactive and engaged in, you know, that, but there's a part of us that needs to stay withdrawn from the conflict, and that's the part that's our center. And in some ways, the fact that we're choosing to do a God this time, and, you know, we do throw in gods every once in a while, obviously. And
throw
Shiva
in a god.
I throw in a god. I'm not throwing in the towel, at least. That, you know, it's Shiva has a very interesting dynamic to this, and I found it very fascinating as I was going through this thing over here in my personal business professional environment, and I'm researching this deity, and I'm watching, and I'm going, wow, there's some really profound things for me to catch here about the dynamics. So that's it. That's my, you know, like an end and jumping into Shiva. I will let you talk about something that in our we always talk before the recording. You were discussing about deities in the Hindu and the Hindu tradition and all of that. Yeah. And I'm going to turn this over to you.
Okay. The other thing that's interesting is today is Holi. It's a festival in the Hindu tradition. You may have seen images of it where people are covered in powdered colors and everyone looks a hot mess, and it looks amazingly fun and interesting and exciting. That's today. And it's not necessarily related to Shiva, but we decided just arbitrarily to do Shiva as our topic tonight, and it happens to be a holy day in the Hindu faith. So I just thought that was funny.
That
little
is
synchronicity.
Synchronicity?
So what I wanted in our little write-up I did for today's show, I wrote, plus a bonus cultural appropriation conversation. Because
we're good
I felt
at
like
redefining those.
Yeah, right. I felt like we couldn't talk about Hinduism or a Hindu god without just addressing the topic of cultural appropriation. And so, you know, it seems like a wise place to start, because the question for me was, and I recently had a conversation with a friend who is Hindu. It's actually a husband and wife who are Hindu, and I was asking them, you know, how do you become a Hindu? And they said, you don't. they said, if you're not Hindu, you don't get there's no conversion to Hinduism. And so I started to research, getting ready for tonight's topic, like, okay, well, that's, you know, these two people's opinions, and what are other opinions? And what I'm finding over and over again is you can't convert to Hinduism. And part of that is because the spirituality, the religion, is so overlaid with the caste system. Mm-hmm. And part of how you worship as a Hindu is connected to your caste. So, you know, in the caste system is this hierarchy of where you belong in society based on the family you were born into. And it's actually really difficult. You have people who are born into wealthy families, you have people who are born into middle class families, just like you do in any other culture. But then you have people born into what are called the untouchables. And these are the outcasts of society. And it's not that they've done anything wrong. It's not that there's anything, you know, wrong or bad or evil or anything like that about these folks. They were just born into this caste system. And so depending on the caste system is how you get to worship, the gods that you worship, and so on and so forth. So it's impossible to become Hindu because you can't just join a caste. You have to be born into the caste. So it's really a complicated issue. However, also what I've discovered and what I'm reading and what my Hindu friends have explained is they don't really care if non-Hindu people worship Hindu gods. There's not a big problem with cultural appropriation or other people doing it other ways. And so this is a very interesting conversation that I've been having with lots of specifically white Western pagans is, you know, if you run into a culture where they don't actually care how you connect to their deities and they aren't worried about cultural appropriation, do we still need to be worried about it? And that the answer to that question I'm finding varies very widely between pagan to pagan and how sensitive a specific person might be to other cultures. So I think it's a very difficult topic.
And the bottom line is, if you're not born a Hindu, according to the Hindu system, you can't convert to being Hindu. So, however, and plus,
all the addendum.
At least my very humble opinion is, if you feel a calling to a Hindu god and you feel like working with a Hindu god, to go for it, but to make sure you're doing it respectfully and that you're not taking a Hindu ritual or a Hindu mantra or a Hindu ritual or whatever and westernizing it in a way that fits into your box. Try fitting into that box first. But that's just my opinion. You all do what you want.
Well, obviously that's called free will, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
At least we've by bringing this to the fore and discussing it before we start launching into our little topic here, it puts it into a framework that allows each person to make their decisions. Just like you say, you're asking different pagans, and answers range widely. So
yes.
It is, and trying and doing something with respect is really the most important thing anyway. I mean, think about being respectful to the spirit, however it moves and whatever tradition, whether you're born into it or you feel called to it, or, you know, being respectful. And that goes to the whole system of, you know, the culture itself that you're utilizing the background for. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think very highly of you know, people that I do know that are from the Hindu traditions and beliefs. And, you know, it's interesting because I think Westerners and you know, white Westerners have an
mm-hmm.
issue about the fact that they have, we've talked about this, I think, before, that, you know, they've kind of been chopped up and thrown out and pieces because there's nothing consistent or continual or something they feel they can draw on, because things have been overlaid from different environments. And so when you get, it's like when we came into the United States, or people went to Hawaii, or, you know, and even in Europe and everything, the marauding hordes that come in and take over.
Yeah.
Without the respect. So, but there we are. I actually wanted to also mention that I was actually at the store today. I was kind of taking a spot for Polly, who wasn't there because she was sick, and so just having a reader on premises. And the lady was saying, well, I have to get going. And so there was a customer. She turned, she says, oh, I just finished listening to one of your podcasts, and they're so great, and I love them. And I just love how you talk and banter back and forth and all that. So on the air, I don't know her name, and I don't want to, you know, go into a big thing about this. But I really want to thank her and other people that we have heard from about
nice.
How they like our show and how they like how we put it together. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so Shiva.
Shiva.
What does he do?
Well, I think so the thing to understand first about Hindu faith and Hindu the hierarchy of the gods is that its very most basic level, there is one God. God is formless, and reality and the supreme, the universal soul, and most traditionally that is Brahman, and that is truth and reality. And so some people might say that, you know, Hinduism isn't polytheistic because all gods lead back to one God. And that's true. It's actually pantheistic. There is one huge God that is the universe of all, and then all of these other gods are emanations of that God.
Uh-huh.
And there is a holy trinity of gods in the system. So we have, like, Brahman, the main life force, the all, the nothing, the encompassing, and Shiva is one of the three faces of that.
Uh-huh.
One of the first faces of that. Brahma being the creator, Vishnu being the preserver and Shiva being the destroyer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And also there is the fact that it's because, again, we just want to throw in things that make our heads spin. He also has the creative process on the other side. So he is the destroyer, but he isn't really just the destroyer. Is that, you know, he holds the dance of the energy of the universe and brings back life. So,
right.
Yeah, he kind of has that duality of both sides, but, you know,
yeah.
For many, many stories, he comes in and he does the destruction, but then in actuality, he also brings forth the birthing of the next level or the next experience or the next world.
Yeah, and to add a layer of complication, you know, the Hindus believe in reincarnation. So you have these emanations of sort of what I might refer to as the high gods, and then there are they die or gods are, you know, there's a fight and a god dies or whatever, and then they're reincarnated. Like Shiva's wife is Parvati, is reincarnated, but she's originally, I can't remember all her names now. I probably have it here in my notes somewhere, but she doesn't start out as Parvati. She starts out as
Shakti
is the feminine life force, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Shiva's married like a dozen times, but they're all the same entity that is going through reincarnation. So that adds just a little extra confusion in there for you.
Right. Well, and there you go with all of the, and the names and the versions. I mean, the primitive, it was interesting because I didn't even, you know, I was trying to figure out what some of the things are because I didn't do diagrams. I figured that was going to be a little bit overkill. But, you know, when you look at his different names, is the different incarnations, the different aspects. And, you know, the one that I think most Westerners know is, you know, his being the corpse on which Kali dances.
Right.
So, I mean, but that's just one aspect of it, because Kali is also an aspect of Parvati.
Right.
So, yeah, we have, so, you know, you have, I found it interesting because, of course, I go for attributes and things like, you know, like lists. I love lists, you know, this thing and that thing. But we have that which we will share, and I think we can go into maybe one or two stories, like the story of the churning of the Milky Way. You know,
sure.
We had that with Hathor, actually, to come up another time. We've done that. So where would you like to go with this?
What? Tell us a story, Elvira.
A story. Well, what I'm going to do is in my myriad of, you know, things. I will look at the we'll do with the churning of the well, it's the milk ocean, actually, is what they call, which is actually, you know, what saved the world.
And, is this the story of Lakshmi?
I believe it's the story where he takes on the serpent and is poisoned. Because he's also dealt with poison. And in, you know, it's kind of like he rescues people through this situation. But yes, he winds up basically Vishnu is in the second incarnation, because he has different ones he goes through, and he's on the tortoise one, and of course Shiva is coming down to the ocean bed, and he has to recover lost treasures, and so there's certain treasures that he was going to go do. And so that was what he was off doing, and, you know, we can talk about the different treasures, but there are various things that are sacred to the faith of traditions that represent the Hindu faith. And so then he winds up, meanwhile, the serpent, and I have to try this, Vasuki, is one of the things that is brought forth. Well, it, you know, basically comes out as a deadly poison, and the Asuras are playing tug of war between, you know, the Devas and the Asuras, and they're playing tug of war, and so it squirts out, and it becomes basically, it goes to the world, and it becomes the flood, and it starts to destroy everything. So obviously Shiva has to help, you know, take care of this, because, oh my God, we're going to lose everything. So he basically swallowed the poison before it actually hit the earth too much, and so it burned his throat. And but it made him, you know, again, he is impervious to poison in the truest sense, but it left a blue mark. And that blue mark is one of the things that you see on all the paintings.
Mm.
So that is one of his many things that he basically goes off and does and comes back again helping out. And there's always, you know, it's like we were talking, I think, when we did Odin, you know, about the Asuras are the demons, and then the Devas are the gods and the goddesses.
Right.
There's always this battle between those two groups.
Yeah.
And so, so he's part of that, but not necessarily leading the demons. He's kind of like the demon fighter, even though he's the lord of demons. You know, or Prince of Demons.
Right.
So, so, and as I said, many, many names that, that I couldn't pronounce half of them that I wrote down, but I look at them and go, there's no way I'm going to try and get that out. So, do you have a story that you would like to share?
I don't have a story. I actually went super heady on this one and did mostly facts and figures and Hindu stuff.
Well, then,
so,
throw some facts at us so our head can get heavy.
Facts. All right, let's see. What else can we do? Oh, some of the ways that Shiva shows up physically. Some facts and figures there. So he is, and I'm saying he, Shiva is a man. However, he is not always shown as in a male body. Sometimes you see Shiva with a half, there's a line right down the center, and half of his body is a man's body and half of his body is a woman's body. Genitalia and all split right down the middle. That is a specific representation of Shiva. This is when he is in his Mahashivrati form. That's often during the when there is a celebration of the lingam and the pouring, and I'll talk about the lingam and all that fun stuff. But that's when him and Parvati are at their union, their ultimate union. Mm-hmm. They form into one being who is both gendered. I find that pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. That actually reminds me of the world, the tarot card, the world in at least the Rider deck, where you have the individual that is both sexes.
Right. Uh-huh. Beyond gender. Yeah. You also often see him pictured when he's in artwork with a third eye. And that is because, you know, the third eye, we all have a third eye, but this just shows that how open and aware his third eye is, that he can understand the effect of karma on our lives. He can see the future. He, and that eye holds power. Like, he can open that eye with different emotions and it will have impact. So if he opens the third eye in anger, it can actually cause a fire that consumes things. If he opens the eye in sadness, it can cause tears that flood, because, you know, remember, he's the destroyer, right? As you mentioned, Elvira, there's that thing with the poison, and so you often see Shiva with a cobra necklace. He has power over the most dangerous creatures. A snake represents the power of resurrection and destruction, because the snake sheds its skin, right? So that's part of Shiva's power. There is, he's often shown with a trident, which is supposed to represent the triumvirate nature of the Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu threefold, right? And one of the things that I really love, because I just noticed shit like this, he's often dressed in animal skin, or wearing animal skin, or sitting on animal skin. And it's often like it looks like a cheetah or a leopard, jaguar, something, you know, a wild cat. And this is also true of the Greek god Dionysus. And there is some
belief that, you know, Dionysus went wandering in his madness. And so I wonder, because of that piece of imagery, if there is some relation between Dionysus and Shiva, like if they are distant relatives. You know, I just love it.
Well, I suspect that probably there is. I mean, you know, that also happened with Jesus when he went wandering too.
Right.
So there's also, but there's a bull. He loves to also ride on the white bull called Nadi.
Right.
And I like that. It's his vehicle. You know, that kind of goes, okay. And thinking of the bull, again, you think of Crete and the bull jumping and the whole thing around that. So you see the connections of, and even in Egyptian, you can see how all of these energies kind of meld together. So for obvious reasons, the male energy of the bull is very dang, you know, very kind of a thing.
Right.
So.
Right, and the cow is a very sacred animal in India in general, but in the Hindu faith, many Hindus are vegetarian, not all of them, many are, but even if they're not vegetarian, they don't eat beef.
Right, right. So it does have that. And the bow, I know that the bow is an emblem of his power, too. Eating the bow, there's a couple of stories, I don't have them written down, but in reading all the things quickly, I remember there was the bow and the arrow, and I'm thinking, wow, okay, this guy's got a lot of things going for him. But, you know, as that goes. So, okay, so we've got facts there on what those things are. And what about the lingam? I think that in, you know, there is something very... anytime anyone hears that and sees that, it's kind of like, ah, and they immediately, you know, connect in. And because our modern culture has had such a reawakening in the 60s with, you know, all the different energies that they did through meditation and yoga and all of that. And I know that it probably was even farther back, but it really got popularized at that point. That most people know what a lingam is and a Shiva lingam, and if nothing else, they've at least seen it once in a picture. So
yeah, well, you can find lingam stones, which actually kind of look like long eggs, and lingam stones traditionally come from this river in India, and they're believed to be a representation of Shiva's genitals, and part of the deal is, you know, Shiva is a very passionate god. He has very extremes in his behavior. He can, he's never like moderate. He's either very withdrawn and calm and reserved, or he's wild and hedonistic and, you know, Dionysian, right? And it is only his relationship with his wife, Parvati, that brings balance, and that's why the two of them are, you know, you see that the imagery of the two of them as one being, that is ultimate balance. And so you see these lingam stones that, you know, I mentioned you can get the actual stones, or there is the Shiva lingam, and it is like a dish, and it's often made out of stone, but it has a phallic piece to it. And then around the phallic part is sort of a saucer almost, and you pour libation to Shiva, and often this is milk, and this also represents semen. You pour that over the lingam, and it will gather in this sort of moat around it, for lack of a better word. And often they will even have like a pour spout where then the milk will gather and pour off of the lingam stone, and you can either, you know, offer that as a sacred drink or offer that into the ground as a blessing. But there's this whole ritual process of working with the lingam stones.
Wow. Well, there you go. It's kind of rumpf. Yes. So there are, again, not necessarily, but stones with holes in them become the yoni, and of course the lingam. and you would have another one of the representations would be the stone with the yoni at the bottom. Being,
right.
You know, what we obviously know is penetration, and there we are. So,
mm-hmm.
And all pillars were considered, you know, Shiva Lingam. So that all temples had them and houses had them. So they were, you know, it was part of the architecture, it was part of the ritual, it was part of all that, which, again, goes back to our concepts of balance, you know, the positive, the negative, the destruction, the creation. Which is, you know, I guess in a way, with Shiva, I found that because he represented, in most instances, the destructive, but it's also the creative, and that the love and the Parvati aspect balanced both out.
Mm-hmm.
The balancing of the energies, but both of these individual deities took part in it. And one of the things I was telling you is that it was a very interesting thing to hear that it's basically the destruction of the form,
mm-hmm.
not the actual energy or essence. And that's what all of this is about, you know, getting rid of the form and going to the actual essence of what it is, and that it rebirths itself just like we do in the concepts of reincarnation, is that you rebirth yourself. And,
right.
You know, so
Perhaps we take our quick break, and then we can talk more about destruction.
Ooh, wonderful, wonderful. Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Right back.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays, 5 to 6, Fit and Foxy, Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays, 6 to 7, and The Witch, the Priestess and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays, 6 to 7, all times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
We're back. Hello? Are we back?
Sorry. Yeah,
I
had myself on mute and then it wouldn't unmute.
Oh my God, I was thinking.
I was starting to take it personal.
We were talking about going back to the destruct problem.
I know.
Okay. And we do need to mention at some point his children, which a couple of them pretty important here. So,
sure.
But anyway, destructive nature. Where do you want to start? This is one of those where he gets very excited and things change.
Well, one, you know, there are several stories. So not only are people reincarnated and the gods are reincarnated, but so is the earth. And Shiva and Vishnu and Brahma have been responsible for creating and destroying and recreating the earth many times.
Mm-hmm.
And so Shiva is the end, the last step, the final god in the process. And often,
mm-hmm.
sometimes what happens is Shiva gets so caught up in a situation, gets so angry about something. There's a story about one of the incarnations of Parvati. I can't remember now which one, but Shiva isn't invited to a gathering, and in order to show her displeasure in the fact that he was rudely treated, she jumps into the sacred fire and sacrifices herself. And Shiva's, you know, meditating while this happens, and then he finds out
that while he was meditating, his wife just, you know, committed suicide to show her displeasure and the fact that he wasn't invited to the party. And he gets super pissed, and his anger rages and rages so that he starts. And this is another thing connected to Shiva, the sacred dance. He starts the sacred dance that will destroy the world. And he is so caught up in that dance that it takes a huge act to get him to stop. And this is a story that repeats itself in many different ways. And this particular story, and I remember the incarnation, it's Sati. The other gods recognize that Shiva is dangerously close to destroying everything, and it's not time yet. It's too soon. And so they take some of the ashes of Sati and they pour them on top of him, and just the connection to her ashes calms him, and he stops dancing, and they save the world from being destroyed before it's time.
Well, definitely when he's called the Lord of the Dance, I'm sorry, I keep going back to, you know, the Irish.
The river dance?
Yes, the river dance. I'm like, oh my God, no, not that one, not that one. We're not over there. So, refocus. Yes,
yeah.
And truly, he also got upset. You know, one of the other things that, and I know this is one of the things, that his anger, you know, his flares, is that he basically... Parvati had, out of the dust and her own body sweat, created a child, beautiful, loving child, fully formed and everything, and asked that this child, who, you know, would basically be her gatekeeper, and he took his job very seriously. And unfortunately, when Shiva came up to the gate and wanted to see his wife, Parvati, this individual called Ganesh, refused his entry, and he got so upset that he ripped his head off. And of course, then Parvati got pissed off and, you know, wouldn't see him and didn't want to talk to him. And so he had to, until he recreated her child, but the only head that he could find was an elephant's head, that because an elephant was passing by. So he put the head onto the body and reanimated it. And that is how we have, you know, the elephant-headed god Ganesh, who, you know, has, you know, and I've always thought of that as kind of interesting about, you know, head, because you notice they have a lot of head changing and shifting, morphing, and of course so too do the Egyptians.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that is also part of his you know, the anger part is he kind of goes a little wild there, forgets about, you know, the process.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I think Shiva also and Parvati had the war god, and I'm going to try. It's Kartikeya. And in parentheses, it's also Skada or Kumara. And so there was that, which was, you know, I went, war god. Interesting.
Right.
So, the wealth god. And again, this is one of those Kubera, or, you know, in terms of the name. I apologize if I butcher it. But those were the three deities, and I know that... that the energies that came out of these, and I'm sure there's a lot more. They just happen to like to talk about those as being like the primary that we have info on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, one of his big Mahashivratri is one of the big celebrations of Shiva. This year, it's already passed. It was on February 14th of 2018. So we missed it, but it translates as. I know. The Great Night of Shiva, and it's on the new moon in the month of Maagha, I think that's how that's pronounced, and it is a day of fasting. So, you know, in popular legend, if you couldn't find anything to kill while you were hunting, a hunter, you would have to wait on a branch of a specific tree. In order to attract the deer, so this is based on this myth, that you would have to throw specific tree leaves on the ground. when it happened in this one particular year, the hunter who did it didn't realize that there was a Shiva Lingam beneath the tree. And Lord Shiva appeared and blessed him with wisdom. And on that day, the hunter decided to stop eating meat. So then there's another myth connected to this this holy day, is that Earth was faced with imminent destruction and Parvati and Shiva pledged to save the world. Shiva was very pleased that Parvati wanted to help save the world. And so from that day onward, people began to worship them together and gave him this holy day where they would fast to show their willingness to save the world. And so the things that you leave out for offerings are obviously the Shiva Lingam. You give offerings to it. All the Hindu holidays are so bright and beautiful. I love that. You sing and you praise Lord Shiva, that you decorate with colorful decorations, and you leave wood apple leaves, cold water, and milk.
Ooh, nice.
Cold water specifically, I'm finding interesting. I don't know why. Yeah. It's interesting.
Well, I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe to keep the passion at a chilled level. I don't know.
I don't know. But I think also if you think about, you know, India in general, this isn't true everywhere of India. It's a huge country, but it's a warm country. So in ancient times, cool water would have not been something that would have been easy to come by.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it would have been a great offering. I mean, compared to places that have a lot of snow and cold, and kind of think, don't want it, but yeah.
Right.
So it's really interesting that, I don't know, as you say, there are always flowers and there's lots of, there's lots of things that they kind of tempt the deities with in terms of thanking them and being bright and in terms of that situation. So, I like that. Let's throw flowers on the altar.
Right. Yeah.
So, and obviously we have, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say another big part of Hindu celebrations are processions. And I think I just said recently, we don't do enough processions in the Western world.
I think you said it on the Hathor, which was
They take huge idols of Shiva out into the streets and he's carried through the streets and there are flowers and chanting and singing and people come from all over the land into the bigger cities in order to just catch a glimpse of the idol that they carry through the streets. How fun is that? Of course, in this specific festival, you're supposed to fast so that your wishes will be granted. But still, in other festivals, there's, you throw powders and you get to eat foods and there's flowers everywhere. This sounds amazing. We need more of this.
Well, I think that's a really great idea. Of course, now, come on, I have to say, I'm going to have to, kind of give a little sidebar here to the Catholic faith. I mean, they do take their icons and their saints and they parade them. They do their procession. So
nice.
I think that is also part of the process. And I think even in the Greeks, they did a lot of processing with the things. I think it's just we as pagans don't do a lot of processing. I think that's the issue.
Well, and I think in the United States we don't. There's parades, but that's not the same.
No. My thought is we do protests and parades. We don't process.
Right.
We forgot the other P. That's it.
Oh, well.
I know, we have to just kind of figure it out. But I also found it interesting that he is considered the Lord of Yoga.
Right.
Which I was like, yoga. Okay, that's, but that's his ascetic side. The other side of the creation passion, but the other side. He is a duality, but not in the either or. It's and in both.
Right.
Because I was going, God of the yoga, I love it, great, but it was only about being very, very focused and controlled and celibate and, kind of in, but okay, You know, I can go with that somewhat. So the art of meditation. So he's got a lot of things. This is one busy dude.
Yeah. Part of the breakdown of his name is liberation, final emancipation, and the auspicious one. You know, because he brings the final end of everything, the final destruction of everything. And I like how that's phrased as liberation and final emancipation. You know, there's this idea that destruction is something bad is not what Shiva is about. Shiva is actually, as a deity, Shiva is quite genial and most of the time and joyful and kind. And so we have this almost gentle God who is the destroyer of everything, because that is sometimes the kind and gentle thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it works, you know, it works in the way that this tradition sees it. And
right.
I think when you look at why people flocked to, you know, ashrams and meditation and yoga and the different things that are part, not just of this god, but of the culture, but specifically we've already mentioned some of the things that fall under this deity's, you know, hold on the situation, is that people were looking for finding a way to balance the opposites themselves and their world. So,
right.
And he has that. He is very gentle, and yet he also has this, you know, slow to anger, but when he does, watch out kind of feeling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's been a real interesting experience getting the information, and you know, they always have so many stories. I mean, this is, you know, there's just so many stories, and they're so convoluted. And trying to follow their path.
Yeah, and like we've talked about with other gods and goddesses when we've done shows on them, you know, India is a huge country. It's a huge landscape. And so when we're talking about Shiva, and there is much modernization even in Hinduism, but there are all these different stories of Shiva because of the way he shows up in different parts of India. And, you know, all of these stories are a little bit different of a version, or a little bit different of an energetic, or a little bit different of a focus. So we always have to keep that in mind, you know.
And that's, you know, a very wise way. There's a sense of being very earthy. I guess, you know, he may be very celestial in some of the things he does, because, of course, he is a god, and, you know, that. But there's an earthiness to him, and maybe that aspect is what, with Dionysus, he's very earthy. He's very with the people, the things, the woods and all. I mean, there's a sense of that. So I had a lot of fun and a lot of interest in what I did find out, because it really, you know, some of it I know this, I know that, but it was, I mean, he comes, the actual deity comes from Rudga, or Rudga, was it Rudga? Rudra, can't say it, Rudra, and that was a very primitive version that, you know, became pre- Bronze Age, and then you kind of go on from there and comes forward, and you know, he's got a long life. He's just changed, as you say, from one part of India all the way down into the tip, and it changes. But so he's a very changeable guy. I like him.
Right.
But so we actually are almost at our time. Do we want to kind of do any kind of a closure or saying anything more? I think we've wandered through with great enthusiasm for what we've got. I don't know if there's
I think the only thing I would add is, if you are feeling, you know, called or curious about exploring
a relationship with Shiva or really any Hindu god is to understand, you know, there's the Vedic system is what the spirituality is. And so looking more at the Vedic systems and how you can connect into that part of the spiritual side of it will help you connect into the worship and the devotion side of it. Because it's not really about Hinduism. It's more about the Vedic system.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's beautiful and interesting and deep. And it's a culture that has existed for thousands of years. And these gods have been worshipped for thousands of years without interruption. And my experience when working with deity who have not been through a period of death, like some of the other traditions that we've talked about on this show, is that they listen. They're much more, they're faster to respond. They're very alive, especially if you go to a Hindu temple, even if it's, you know, in California, there are Hindu temples that you can visit, and the pulse and the vibration is fascinating and beautiful. So it's definitely, it's worth checking out.
Oh, definitely. And like a lot of what we've experienced in our own explorations is when you actually get to go into one of the traditional temples or ritual, you know, processions or things that you can participate in, you feel it. Because the people, the devotees that are doing this are there, and you personally will get an understanding of the feel, and if that feels good along with anything that you do, because, you know, we also talk about being responsible about checking out, you know, what you're going to be doing and where you're going to go, but it's important to do that, but it's the feel. Does it feel right? Is it right?
Absolutely. So. Respecting the origins.
Yes. So,
well, on that note, we should probably tie it up.
Yeah, well, next week we're going to do circle. We're going to do a tradition. I believe it's Circle Sanctuary, correct?
Right, Circle Sanctuary and Selena Fox.
Yes. So, who was at PantheaCon, I believe?
Yeah, she's usually at PantheaCon. She's an adorable fire plug. I've enjoyed virtually everything I've gone to that she's presented. She's a lovely woman who's done wonderful things for the pagan community.
Well, I am part of her Facebook friend list, and I always love the things that she posts and the pictures of the rituals and the devotions that she puts up. So it'll be very interesting to get a little bit more of a base understanding of where she comes from. So that'll be exciting, and we will... still be here, even though the rains are coming and coming. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you feel much better and your body, your uterus doesn't spend too much time rebelling. And
I'm going to go get a heating pad and sit on the couch and maybe drink some alcohol.
Oh, there you go. Probably will do wonders for whatever goes on, and if not, what the hell? It feels good, right?
Yeah, give it a shot. That's right. There's nothing a hot toddy can't fix.
Not a bloody thing. No pun intended.
All right. Thanks
All right.
for listening.
Well, everyone, take care. Have a good time and a wonderful week. Talk to you in a week.
And happy Holi.
Happy Holi.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestess.com. witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.